She closed her eyes, horrified by the words, certain that women did not do such a thing. Devil returned to his task, his tongue flickering just barely at the core of her. Too lightly, barely there. She opened her eyes. Tevin! The name came on a whine. His eyes met hers over the long expanse of her torso, and she saw the mischief in them. Please, she said. More. Show me, he said, continuing his teasing. She knew what he wanted from her. Could she do it? He leaned back and blew a long, slow stream of air over her. Gentle. Useless. Damn it. She lifted her hips. He rewarded the movement with a little suck to her straining flesh. She gasped. And then, the monster, he returned to his barely there touch. Do it! He lifted his head and gave her a look of pure challenge. You do it. God help her, she did, guiding him to her, lifting her hips, taking her pleasure. In response, he wrapped his arms around her hips, pulling her closer, holding her tight and firm, feasting at her as she sighed his name again and again, writhing against him. He moved one hand to add to her pleasure, sliding it inside her, finding a spot that made her see stars. Tevin! His response was a growl, the vibration adding to the immense pleasure he wrung from her, the command in it making her grasp tighten, her hips rise, her pleasure crest. And Felicity was lost, unable to do anything but give herself up to this magnificent man and his magnificent touch, pulsing against him, crying out his name as the world tilted and everything she knew changed. And somehow, as she flew apart, she began to laugh. It was uncontrollable, an exclamation of deep, nearly unbearable euphoria rolling through her as he summoned pleasure from her as she moved against him and let herself go. She laughed and reveled in this man, his kiss, his touch, her fingers scraping through his tightly shorn hair. Soon, his mouth softened, his fingers stilling as she quieted. He turned his head, setting his lips to her thigh once more, softly. She caressed his head and face, the back of his neck and his beautiful wide shoulders, not wanting to let him go. Was that? He looked up at her, and she could read the desire in his eyes, dark and sinful. It was glorious. She blushed. I didn't mean to laugh. I know. Was it normal to laugh? She couldn't ask him. So instead she said, I've never felt that way. Something flashed across his face, there and then gone before she could read it, replaced by a sly smile, one side of his beautiful mouth tilting up. I know, love. I was there. I felt you against me, tight around my fingers, pulsing against my tongue. And that laugh, it was the most erotic thing I've ever heard. For the rest of time, I shall hear that laugh in my dreams. And then he stood, stroking the palms of his hands down his thighs, the last rays of sun turning the sky blood red behind him. He was gone, still there, but gone from her, as though he'd never been there to begin with. She came forward on the bench. Devon? He shook his head, barely glancing at her. I shouldn't have told you that. Why not? Because it's not for you. The words stung like a blow. She stiffened. He swore, low and dark, running his hands over his perfectly formed head. She hated that she noticed that perfection. Hated that she noticed everything about him. The dark slash of his brows, low over his eyes, the furrow between them. The straight line of his nose, and the barely there indentation at the tip of it. The shadow of beard on his cheeks, as though he could not shave enough to keep its darkness at bay. And that scar, wicked and beautiful, because it was his. Not for you. Never to be hers. He was the lock she would never pick. It didn't matter that he seemed to know a dozen ways to open her. You asked me for something true, he said, gruff edge in his voice. Earlier. She stood, wanting to be free of the bench that would never be hers again, because it would always be his. Yes, and you lied.
I didn't, he said. I told you I wanted you.
For a moment, not forever. She didn't say it, and she was proud of herself.
And I didn't lie when I told you that my name wasn't for you either.
He didn't have to say it twice. It didn't have to sting twice. Yes, devil, I am not addle-brained. I understand your birth name is too precious to share with me. He looked away again, cursed again.
For Christ's sake, Felicity, when I say it isn't for you, it's because it's not precious at all, because it defiles you to speak it.
She shook her head.
I don't... It's not my birth name. I don't have a birth name. I was found, days old, wrapped in swaddling clothes and screaming on the banks of the River Colne, a note pinned to me, with instructions that I was to be sent to my father.
Dear God. Her chest tightened at the words, at the vision of him, a child, a babe, left. Who would do such a thing?
My mother, he said without emotion. Before she filled her pockets and walked into the water, thinking me better off without her.
Felicity felt ill. What must that poor woman have been facing? What fear must she have carried? What sadness?
And then he added, she thought he would accept me.
Of course she'd thought that. Who wouldn't accept him, this pillar of a man, proud and strong and brilliant and bold? How could any man not love such a son? How could anyone not love such a man? How could anyone leave him? The thought rioted through her on a flood of recognition. She loved him. Somehow she'd fallen in love with him. What was she going to do? She stepped toward him, reaching for him, wanting to show him, wanting to love him. Devil! He shook his head at the whispered name and stepped back, refusing her touch, his words unfeeling. Miraculously so.
He did not come for me, and no one in town wanted a bastard cast off, so they sent me to an orphanage. I had no name, so they named me Devon Colne, for the county from whence I came, and the river where my mother died.
She reached for him again, only to have him pull away again. Your father, he must not have known. The letter must not have found him. He would never have left you.
You will make a lovely mother some day, he said. I told you that once before, but I want you to know I mean it. There will come a time when you will have beautiful mahogany-haired daughters, Felicity, and I want you to remember that you will be a remarkable mother.
Her eyes stung with tears at the words, at the invocation of those children that she did not want if they were not shared with a man she loved, with this man whom she loved.
You wanted the truth, Felicity Faircloth, and there it is. I am so far beneath you that I soil you with my very thoughts.
She lifted her chin. That's not true. Did he not see he was magnificent? Did he not understand that he was 10 men, stronger and wiser and smarter than anyone she'd ever known? He reached for her then, his fingers trailing over her cheek, in a caress that felt too much like a farewell. She reached up to capture his hand. Devil, she repeated. It's not true.
I made a mistake, he said,
so softly it was almost carried away on the wind. The words made Felicity ache with sadness. This isn't a mistake, she said. This is the best thing I have ever known. He shook his head.
You'll never forgive me, he said, looking at her. Not if I take you from the life you deserve. Don't seek me out again.
He dropped his hand and turned away. She watched him go, willing him to turn back, telling herself that if he turned back it would mean something. If he turned back he cared for her. He didn't. And her frustration and irritation simmered over. Why? She called after him, getting angrier by the moment, hating the way he had stripped her bare and made her believe that she mattered. And then left her, as though she were nothing but an afternoon distraction. As though she were nothing at all. He stopped, but did not look at her. She did not move, refusing to chase him.
Even a wallflower had pride. But she let her frustration ring out. Why me? Why give me a taste of this? Of you? Of your world? Why let me have it and then snatch it away? It was becoming more difficult to see him in the dimming light, and she wondered if he would answer her. When he did, it was soft enough that she wondered if he meant her to hear it. If he realized that the breeze would carry the words to her, just as the bench had done earlier.
Because you're too important.
And he was gone into the darkness. Chapter 20. Felicity had heeded his instructions. She had not sought him out, nor had she broken into his offices or his warehouse, nor had any of his watches seen her in Covent Garden. In fact, Rixton, returned to his post outside Bumble House, had reported virtually no activity from Felicity at all, since Devil had left her in her gardens. She had not even resorted to sending him a note. It had been 3 days, and Felicity had left him in peace, and Devil found he was more and more consumed with her with every passing second. Perhaps he could have avoided it if he hadn't answered the summons she'd sent via Brixton. Perhaps he might have been able to ignore her if he hadn't kissed her in the gardens. If he didn't remember the sound of her voice carried along that whispering bench. If he didn't know she laughed when she came. She laughed when she came. He'd never known a woman to give herself over to pleasure like that. So fully, so completely, that her pleasure poured from her in pure, unadulterated joy. For the rest of his life, he would remember the sound of her laughter in that garden, shared with him in the setting sun and the trees and nothing else. For the rest of his life, he would dream of the taste of her pleasure and the sound of it. He was ruined by her. He'd spent 3 days pretending to ignore the memory of her pleasure, of her glorious, rolling laughter, and finally, in failure, had left his offices to meet the latest ice shipment on the Thames. The sun had barely set, sending gold and purple streaks across the sky above London, and it was high tide. Devil crossed over Fleet Street, toward the docks, checking his watch as he walked. 9:10. He noted the quiet of the taverns frequented by London stockworkers, most of whom would have found work that evening, seeing ships in and out of the moorings on the river, while tide was high and the boats could be controlled. Once tide ebbed, it would be 12 hours before the ships could be moved, and time in shipping was funds. Crossing down to the river's edge, walking stick in hand, he followed the docks for a few hundred yards to the large berth the bastards leased on evenings when they received shipments. A massive ship loomed ink-black against the grey sky, just docked, half-sunken in the high water because of its cargo. 150 tons of ice, a good portion of it melted inside the hold. Wit was already there, black hat low on his brow, greatcoat waving in the wind, with Nick by his side. The Norwegian was leafing through lading papers under the nervous gaze of the ship's captain. "It's all here, according to the papers," she said. "But we can't be sure until we get to it."
"How long?" Wit asked,
lifting his chin in acknowledgement of Devil's approach.
"If we're lucky, Wednesday night."
2 nights hence.
"If we start draining the melt from the hold tonight, the moment the tide begins to ebb, it might be finished before then."
"Two nights and no more," Wit growled. "We can't risk it sitting without full guard for longer."
A dozen men would be posted to protect the cargo while the water was drained from the ship's hold, because there was no other option. It was impossible to access the hold while it was filled with ice melt. But the docks were low ground, and while on them, the guard could protect neither the cargo nor themselves as well as the bastard's light.
"Two nights, then. I shall have the boys prepare for wet boots."
Nick nodded to the captain, releasing him to his ship once more.
"We'll want extra guards on the move to the warehouse as well," Devil said,
tapping his stick against the boards of the dock.
"I don't want to see another load compromised."
"Done."
"Excellent work, Nick."
The Norwegian dipped her head in a barely there acknowledgement of the praise.
"Especially since Devil had nothing to do with this one," Wit added.
Devil looked to him.
"What does that mean? You've spent 2 weeks mincing after the girl.
Why in hell are you tracking me?
Whit looked away down the dock.
As long as he is here, I'm having everyone tracked.
Ewan.
If he wanted us, he would have come for us. He wants Grace. Between her cover and her guard, she's well protected.
Whit grunted, low and full of grit.
I'm surprised you knew we had a shipment coming in today, with all the time you've had with your girl.
What a fucking bastard his brother was.
I had to convince her to trust me if we were going to use her to punish him.
Whit grunted.
That's still the plan, is it?
No, Devil replied instantly, knowing that he was begging for trouble, but he rejected the idea of using Felicity as a pawn in their game so thoroughly now that he could not find the strength to pretend otherwise. Christ, he'd made a hash of it.
Bad plan after all, innit? Whit said,
and Devil resisted the urge to put his fist into his brother's face.
Bollocks off!
Whit shared a sidelong glance with Nick, who spoke for them both. If that isn't the plan, then what have you been doing all this time?
You worry about the ship, Devil said. This isn't your business.
She shrugged and turned away.
It's a fair question, bruv.
It was, but that didn't mean Devil had to answer it.
Tonight you find your tongue. Someone's got to help you sort out your idiocy. I'm handling it, Devil said.
He was. He would. All he had to do was stop thinking about her goddamn laugh.
You fucking fools.
Devil turned toward the words.
Excellent.
He looked to Nick.
Leave while you still can.
The Norwegian made her way up the gangway to begin her assessment of the hold as Grace neared, tall and proud, and perfectly turned out in a tailored scarlet coat. She was flanked by two lieutenants, women in similarly cut black coats. All that was visible beneath the trio's outerwear were black boots, but Devil knew they were all wearing trousers, which made for fast walking and even faster running, should they need to avail themselves of the skill. The guard stopped 10 yards from them as Grace approached. Whit's brows rose, and he looked over his shoulder at their sister for a long moment before returning his attention to the half-sunken ship in the water.
Evening, Dahlia.
Grace narrowed her gaze on Whit.
What the hell has you so chatty?
Before he could answer, she turned to Devil.
The two of you together have the sense of an addle-brained hedgehog.
I am routinely amazed that London's best and brightest find you charming, Devil said.
Did you think I wouldn't discover it? Did you think it could happen beyond my notice? Is it possible that the two of you have suffered simultaneous blows to the head and forgotten that I am smarter than you both put together?
Whit looked to Devil.
She seems unhappy.
Unhappy?
With lightning speed, Grace boxed Whit's ear.
Oi!
Whit danced backward, a hand at the offended body part.
Fucking hell!
You shouldn't talk when you are so out of practice, beast.
She stepped toward him, a finger raised at his nose.
You should have told me.
Told you what?
Whit asked in a frustrated near whine. She'd already turned her back on him, however, rounding on Devil, who held up his walking stick to keep her from getting too close.
And you, I ought to have you tossed into the river. You deserve to reek of it for days. You deserve whatever perverse creature would find its way into you from the muck.
Devil lowered his stick, recoiling at the words. Grace had always been the best of them at verbal threats. Devil was better at making good on them.
Good God, that's grim.
Do you know what day it is?
What?
Do you know what day it is?
It's Monday.
Devil grew nervous.
It is indeed Monday.
She reached into her coat and extracted a newspaper.
And do you know what is printed in Monday's newspaper?
Shit.
Whit let out a low whistle.
Ah, and so we return to my original assessment.
Addle-brained hedgehogs, Whit said.
Grace spun around and raised one black-gloved finger at him.
Hedgehog, singular. One infinitesimal brain for both of you to share.
She turned back to Devil.
I don't know what you're on about, he said, brazening it through.
Don't you even try denying it. And don't play the fool, though you obviously are one.
She paused and took a breath, and when she spoke, the words were softer than he expected, full of more emotion than she expected. Banns were posted yesterday at St. Paul's. The announcement of the Duke of Marwick's engagement is in today's news. Devil reached for the paper.
Dahlia.
She wrapped his hand with a rolled-up print, and he recoiled.
When were you going to tell me?
We didn't think you would.
He looked to Wit, who offered no assistance. He returned his attention to Grace and cursed.
What did you think I would do? Toss myself off the nearest bridge?
Devil looked away.
No, of course not.
Rend my clothes?
He tried a small smirk.
Perhaps.
She cut him a look.
My clothes are far too expensive for rending.
He gave a little huff of laughter at that.
Of course they are.
What then?
Well, murder wasn't an impossibility, Devil replied. And the last thing we need is a dead duke.
Wit grunted.
It's not like we haven't had one of those before.
Grace ignored them both.
I'm not here because he's to be married. I'm here for you to explain why my girls tell me his fiancée is under the protection of the bare-knuckle bastards.
He froze at the words. Grace noticed, as she noticed everything, one red brow rising.
Did I not just finish pointing out that the last thing we need is a dead aristocrat? I had to protect the girl. She wants into the garden as much as anyone here wants out of it.
What is the daughter of the Marquis of Bumble doing in the garden, Dev? His sister asked.
Wit made things worse.
Devil likes the girl.
Grace didn't look away from him.
Does he?
I like her too much.
This is the plain girl I met in your offices, correct?
She's not plain.
The words garnered both Wit and Grace's attention. Wit grunted, and Grace said thoughtfully,
No, I don't suppose she is.
Tevil felt like an idiot, but did not reply. Grace changed tack.
Why wouldn't you tell me that you're trying to manipulate him?
Because we agreed that you would never meet again. Because we agreed that nothing about him is safe for you.
Grace was too valuable. The Duke could never know where she was. Grace was proof of a past that Ewan would do anything to keep secret. If Grace were discovered, Ewan would hang. A long silence followed the words, and she said,
We agreed that decades ago.
It's no less true now, and you know it. He's come for you. He remembers the deal. No heirs, and he wants a trade.
Understanding flared in Grace's blue eyes.
A trade? Or does he want both?
He gets neither, Devil replied.
She looked from one of her brothers to the other.
We're not children any longer.
Wit shoved his hands in the pockets of his greatcoat as she continued.
You don't have to protect me any longer. I can go toe-to-toe with you in any day. Let him come for me, and I shall show him the sharp end of my blade.
It wasn't true. Ewan was ever Grace's weakness, just as she was his. And fate was a cruel bitch to make them each the demise of the other.
Grace, Devil began softly.
She waved off the rest.
And so, what? What game are you playing, Dev? You're not planning on letting the girl marry him, are you?
No.
Christ, no.
What then? You plan to end the engagement and send him a message? No heirs?
She looked to Wit. Wit spread his hands wide.
I wanted to beat him bloody and send him back to the country.
Grace smirked.
That's still idiotic, but less so. Christ, you two.
She grew serious.
I should have been in on the plan, she said softly. I should be in on it from here on out.
Why?
Because he didn't steal my future.
That's a fucking lie, Wit said. He stole your future the moment he drew breath. Yours more than ours,
Devil agreed. And her past, and her heart. But they never discussed that.
You were the heir.
Grace went still, every inch of her stealing at the words. She shook her head.
I was never heir.
She'd been a girl. Not that it had mattered, as the Duke, their father, had already set his terrible plan in motion. Devil pressed on.
You were born of the Duchess, baptized the future Duke, and Ewan stole your future as keenly as our father did.
Grace looked away, the wind from the Thames whipping the full fabric of her scarlet coat around her legs.
"Your father hated me from the start," she said, loud enough to be heard over the wind. "I expected his betrayal. I never counted for more than that with him." She shook her head. "But Ewan..." Devil hated the confusion in his sister's voice.
"He betrayed all of us. He stole future from all of us. But you are the only one from whom he stole past."
She looked to him, her gaze tracking the scar on his cheek.
"He nearly killed you."
"He nearly killed us all," Devil replied, the mark tight on his skin.
"He still might," she said. "And here's the other reason I should be in on the plan. I'm the one who knew him best."
That much was true.
"And Ewan can't be manipulated. He does the manipulating."
"Not this time."
"He's no fool. He knows I'm the keeper of all his secrets," she said. "My knowledge, my existence, sees him at the gallows. He won't rest until he finds me. He hasn't rested in 20 years.
"We tell him you're dead," Whit said. "That was always the plan if he got close enough to scent you."
She shook her head.
"You don't put me in the ground until I'm cold, boys. He's too close not to find me."
"We'll never give you up."
"And when I grow tired of hiding..."
Whit growled, and she turned to him.
"Poor beast, always looking to put your fist through something."
She looked to Devil, letting the garden into her voice.
"No worries, bruvs. He won't be the first duke we've fought and won."
She paused and then said,
"Stop worrying about me and worry about the deal. No heirs."
Whit grunted, and Grace turned to him.
"What?"
"Devil's mucked the whole thing up."
Devil gritted his teeth.
"I haven't mucked it up. I've a plan."
Grace looked to him.
"What kind of plan?"
"Yeah, bruv."
Whit looked to him.
"What kind of plan? We know you shan't hurt the girl."
"He should thrash them both."
"I'm getting her out of it."
"Of the marriage," Grace replied.
When he didn't reply, she added,
"How? If he leaves her, she's damaged. If she leaves him, she's damaged. There is no scenario where the girl isn't destroyed, and you knew that going in."
"She was damaged goods before he ever got near her," Whit said.
Devil turned on his brother.
"She was not."
A pause. Then Grace said,
"I heard the same. Something about being found in a bedchamber that was not her own."
"How do you know that?"
Grace raised one red brow in his direction.
"Need I remind you that I am the one with a network of decent spies? Shall I tell you what I've heard about you and finished Felicity Faircloth?"
He ignored the taunt.
"The point is, she's not damaged. She's..."
"Perfect."
Well, he couldn't say that.
"Oh dear," Grace said.
Whit removed his hat and rubbed a hand over his head.
"You see..."
"See what?" Devil asked. "You care for the girl."
"I don't."
"Then throw her to the wolf. Get her to the edge of the altar and ruin her. Prove to Ewan that he'll never marry as long as you live. Or, if he does, he'll be as cheated of real heirs as his own father was. That you will eliminate the possibility of any heir he might find. Make good on your vow."
He looked away from his sister.
"I can't."
"Why not?"
"Because she will be ruined in the balance. At my hands."
"My girls on the ground tell me she's ruined already, Devil. Half the garden saw you kiss the girl on the night you told the world she was off limits."
He never should have touched her that night, nor any of the nights since. But that wasn't the kind of ruination he meant. Not the silly ruination that came with a clandestine kiss. A night of pleasure, stolen moments that meant nothing. For Devil's plan to work, he would have had to have done it publicly, in front of all the world. And Felicity would be exiled for it. She'd never be a jewel of the ton. She'd never return to a place of honor. Never be at the center of that world for which she longed. Grace smirked at his lack of response.
"Tell me again that you don't care for the girl."
"Buck."
Of course he did. She was impossible not to care for. And he'd made a proper hash of it from the start, from the moment he saw her on the balcony, from the moment he veered from his plan to send his brother packing, and instead lingered with her, made promises to her he had no intention of keeping. Made promises he could not keep even if he wanted to.
You've already thrown her to the wolves, Dev, his sister said. There's only one way to save her.
He turned on her, unable to keep the cold rage from his voice.
Ewan doesn't get heirs, and he definitely doesn't get them from Felicity Faircloth.
She's mine. A red brow rose.
Not Ewan.
His brow furrowed.
Who do we know who's good enough for her?
Grace smiled then, full and open and uncalculated. She looked to Wit.
Who, indeed?
Beast!
Devil thought he might lose his mind at the idea of his brother touching Felicity.
Oh, for God's sake, Wit growled. You just might have the intelligence of a hedgehog. She means you, Dev. You marry the girl.
For a heartbeat, emotion rioted through him, the force of it sending him back. Excitement and desire, and something dangerously, impossibly close to hope. Impossibly close and impossible. He closed out the emotions.
No.
Why not?
She doesn't want me.
Lie. Marwick isn't my moth. You are.
Do you want her?
Yes, of course. He couldn't imagine how any man wouldn't want her. His grasp tightened on the silver lion's head in his palm. Grace ignored the answer.
You could marry her. Save her from ruin.
It wouldn't be saving her. It would be trading one ruin for another. What's more ruinous for a high-born lady than life as a missus in the Covent Garden muck? What sort of life would she have here?
Please, Grace scoffed. You're rich as a king, devil. You could buy her the western edge of Berkeley Square.
You could buy her the whole of Berkeley Square, Wit added.
It wouldn't be enough. He could buy her Mayfair, a box at every theatre, dinners with the most powerful men in London, audiences with the king. He could clothe her in the most beautiful frocks a bear could fashion. And she'd never be accepted by them, never be welcomed back, because she'd be married to a criminal. One with whom they happily consorted, but a criminal nonetheless. A bastard, raised in an orphanage and bred in the rookery. If only he'd been the one to win the dukedom, it might be different. He shook his head, hating the thought. One he hadn't had in 2 decades, since he was a boy, aching with hunger and desperate for sleep, somewhere other than on the streets. Behind them, footsteps clattered, fast and furious. A girl, no more than 12, blonde and reed-thin, stopped in front of Grace's lieutenants.
One of mine, Grace said, raising her voice and waving her forward. Let her come.
The girl approached, a square of paper in hand, dipped a knee.
Miss Condrey.
Grace extended a hand to receive the message and opened it, her attention no longer on Devil. Thank God. He'd already said enough to sound like a lovesick fool. Perhaps it was an important enough message for her to stop asking him about Felicity. She dug into her pocket, delivering a coin to the messenger, who was already turning for the darkness.
Off you go, safely.
Grace returned her attention to him.
It occurs that the lady's ruin should be her own decision, don't you think?
Perhaps it was not enough, and Grace would talk about Felicity forever, like perfect torture.
She's already made the decision. She lied about marrying a duke to return herself to society. She chose Marwick, a duke she'd never met.
I wanted to punish them, she'd told him. And I wanted them to want me back.
I made a mistake bringing Felicity Faircloth into this battle.
Wit grunted.
God knows that's true, Grace agreed.
I shall get her out of it and save her future in the balance.
Grace nodded, returning her attention to the slip of paper she'd been delivered.
I'm not so certain you're in control of her future anymore.
Oh, I'm not so certain he's ever been in control of it, Wit said,
bracing himself against the wind. He scowled at them.
The two of you can go to hell.
Tell me.
Grace did not look up.
As part of your arrangement, did the lady ask to be schooled in the art of temptation?
Devil stilled. How would Grace know that?
She did, yes.
His sister looked to him.
And you were unable to provide said instruction?
I instructed her fine.
Wit's brows went up at that, and Devil had the distinct impression that the wheels were coming off the cart.
But it wasn't about tempting just anyone. It was about tempting the untemptable. It was about tempting Ewan, for Christ's sake, to get back into society, to rise to its full height. She wants her reputation restored along with that of her family. Have you not been listening?
The girl doesn't seem to care a bit about her reputation, Devil, Gray said. I might go so far as to say she's absolutely no interest whatsoever in what society thinks of her.
How would you know that? He snapped. You've met her one time.
She brandished the note. Because she's at the club right now. He froze.
Which club?
A perfectly arched red brow rose as she replied, all calm.
My club.
There was a beat, followed by Wit's quiet.
Fucking hell.
Or perhaps it was Devil who said it. He wasn't certain, as he was distracted by the wash of fury that came over him at the words. He was gone in an instant, disappearing into the darkness without farewell, long legs eating up the ground, until he became unsatisfied with his speed and began to run. Grace and Wit stood on the docks, watching their brother disappear into the darkness, before she turned to him and said, "Well, this is all unexpected." Wit nodded once.
You realize that Ewan won't like it when Devil wins.
I do. He looked to her.
You've got to get gone for a bit, Gracie.
She nodded. I know. Chapter 21 Felicity was fairly certain that 72 Shelton Street was a bordello. When she had knocked at the entrance an hour earlier, a small inlaid door had slid open, revealing a set of beautifully coal-lined eyes. And when she told those eyes that Dahlia had invited her, the small door had given way to the larger one, and she'd been welcomed inside. A tall, raven-haired beauty in deep sapphire had met her in a lovely receiving room, explained that Dahlia was not in at the moment, and invited Felicity to wait. As Felicity's curiosity was impossible to deny, she had, of course, agreed. At that point, she'd been provided with a mask and escorted to a larger room, oval in shape, wrapped in silk and satin, and appointed with a dozen or so settees, armchairs, and tufted cushions. Refreshments had been offered. And then the men had arrived, or rather when they'd begun to arrive. The room boasted a half-dozen doors, all closed, except to herald the entry of what must have been some of the handsomest men in Britain. And they'd kept coming, these charming men, offering more wine, more cheese, candied sweets and sweet plums. They sat close and regaled her with stories of their strength, telling her delightful, diverting jokes, and generally making her feel as though she were the only woman in the world, making her forget, almost, the reason she had come in the first place. What was remarkable was this. The charming assembly of men made her feel the center of their world, despite the presence of any number of other women, all of whom entered wearing masks, whose comings and goings appeared to be for the purpose of pairing off with one, and in some cases more than one, of these gentlemen. No doubt for lovemaking. It occurred to Felicity that there was a time when she might have felt uncomfortable with the goings-on inside 72 Shelton Street, but now she was more than thrilled with her decision to accept Dahlia's invitation, because if anyone could teach her how to woo a man such as Devil, it was these men, who were so impressively charming. A tall, handsome man was entertaining her. He'd introduced himself as Nelson, like the hero but better looking, with a smile and gentle eyes that had lovely wrinkles at their corners, and made him seem the kind of man with whom one might like to spend a lifetime, not just an evening. After showering her in compliments, Nelson began to regale her with the story of a cat he'd once known, one who had a penchant for attending regular church services, and not simply attending them.
She was particularly fond of climbing the pulpit and spreading herself across the Book of Common Prayer. Needless to say, the vicar did not care for it, and routinely had to put the cat out to get on with his sermon.
Felicity laughed at the image, as Nelson added, dark eyes twinkling,
I always thought it cruel treatment. The sweet pussy only wished for a pet.
The double meaning in the words did not escape Felicity, and her eyes went wide at the flirt. Was it considered a flirt if it was so overt? Before she could suss out the answer, two raps sounded, and she felt the vibration in the floorboards as Nelson's gaze flickered to a spot behind her. Up, up, until his eyes were also wide, and he was scrambling to his feet. Felicity knew before she turned what she would find there, or rather, whom she would find. It did not change the way her heart began to pound when she discovered Devil in his tall darkness, clad all in black, walking stick in hand, storm clouds in his eyes. Her breath caught as he searched her face, the muscle in his jaw ticking wildly, making her want to reach up and touch it, soothe it. No, there would be none of that. Instead, she straightened her spine and said, "What are you doing here?"
"This place is not for you."
She immediately resisted the words. "I cannot fathom how you are in any position to say so." If possible, the angles of his face grew sharper, his eyes darkening.
"Because this place is in Covent Garden, and I own Covent Garden, Felicity Faircloth."
She smirked. "Well, then I suggest you think very carefully before you give a fairy tale princess free reign of your property."
"God damn it, Felicity," he said, his voice low enough as to not draw attention from the others in the room. "You cannot hie out of Mayfair whenever you like."
"It seems I can, though, can't I?"
Thank goodness for being a spinster. No one ever thought to make sure you remained in your bedchamber after you retired to bed. It made one feel quite chuffed when one did escape one's home.
And even more so when one was able to give a proper set-down to an arrogant man who deserved it. Feeling quite proud of herself, she turned on her heel and crossed the room, opening one of the beautiful mahogany doors and walking straight through it, as though she had any idea where she was going. She would worry about that bit once she was rid of him. Felicity closed the door behind her on the sound of his curse. Blessedly, there was a key in the lock, which she turned and pocketed. She looked about. She was in a stairwell, dimly lit and covered in gold and scarlet satin wall coverings, narrow wooden stairs climbing up to whatever was above. The handle to the door rattled.
"Open the door."
"No," she said. "I don't think I will." A pause, and then again.
"Felicity, open the door."
Excitement threaded through her. Excitement and a sense of freedom like she'd never felt before. "I would imagine you rather wished you had a talent with locks right now, don't you?"
"I don't need a talent with locks, love."
Love. The endearment filled the small, quiet space. She shouldn't let it warm her, but it did. She shouldn't let him warm her. Hadn't he hurt her? Hadn't he sent her away, sworn her off him? She gave a little huff of frustration. And still she wanted that endearment. And still she wanted the man. Felicity turned on one heel and took off, up the steps and quickly, as she wanted to put distance between them before he found a key and came after her. Or perhaps she wanted to put distance between herself and her feelings for him. It didn't matter anymore. She imagined she had a minute or two before the beautiful woman who'd met her at the door provided him with a key. She was three-quarters of the way up the staircase when the door flew in, ricocheting against the wall, only to be caught by Devil's strong arm as he stepped through the doorway. Her mouth fell open as she stilled on the steps.
"Are you mad? I could have been standing there."
"You weren't," he said, coming for her.
She backed up the steps, her heart pounding.
"You broke your sister's door."
"My sister is very rich. She will repair it."
He kept coming.
"I'm not happy with you right now, Felicity Faircloth."
She continued up the steps, one hand lifting her skirts to allow for freedom of movement.
"I can see that, as you just broke down a door."
"I would not have had to do that if you hadn't turned up in Covent Garden."
"This has nothing to do with you," she retreated.
"It has everything to do with me,"
he advanced.
"You told me not to seek you out again."
He was closing in on her, and she found she enjoyed the way her pulse thrummed with every measured footstep.
So you seek out a fucking bordello?
She paused, putting one hand to the wall to steady herself. I had an inkling that was what this was. Now she was rather regretting not exploring a bit more.
An inkling? Devil looked to the ceiling as though for patience. What in hell else would it be? A second white, special for the Covent Garden set.
She tilted her head. It had occurred to me that it might be a, you know, but it hadn't quite felt so bordello-esque. He had nearly reached her. Why are all the ladies masked?
Are you through storming away from me?
She tilted her head. For now?
Only because I've piqued your interest and you want answers.
Why are all the ladies masked? He stopped on the step below her, and the difference in height brought them eye to eye.
Because they don't want to be recognized.
Isn't that the point? Don't the clients wish to see the women's faces?
Felicity.
He paused, a ghost of a smile on his lips.
Darling, the women are the clients.
Her mouth went perfectly round with surprise. Oh, it was a bordello, in reverse. Oh, she repeated. That would explain why Nelson was so very charming.
Nelson is very good at his work.
I can imagine, she said softly.
I prefer you not.
Devil gave a little growl. Her eyes went wide. Was it possible he was jealous?
No, that was impossible.
Men like Devil did not experience jealousy over women like Felicity Faircloth. He interrupted her thoughts.
What are you doing here?
I came to learn how to win you. I have an invitation.
Yes, and my sister is lucky I did not decide to put her into the Thames for extending it to you.
He was so close and speaking so quietly in the shadows.
Now I'm going to ask you one more time, my lady, and you'd do best to tell me the truth. What are you doing here?
For the first time in her life, as she heard the words, my lady, she wondered what it would be like to actually, honestly be someone's lady. What might it be like to stand by his side, to touch him at will, to have him touch her? She wanted it. But instead of saying so, she said softly, You told me I couldn't come to you any longer. He closed his eyes a breath longer than he should.
Yes, the reply grated.
You want to have your cake and eat it too, and I shan't allow it. You may either wash your hands of me or attempt to be my keeper, devil, but you may not have both. And I'm not in the market for a keeper anyway.
As you are standing in the middle of a Covent Garden bordello, I think you absolutely should be.
I am in the middle of a Covent Garden bordello because I am through with keepers, and there is a wide world of things I'd like to learn.
You should go home.
And what will I learn there? How to be a sacrificial lamb? How to marry a man I do not love? How to save a family I find I resent more than I should? Another low growl.
And what do you think this place will teach you?
How to win you, she swallowed. Or the things you refuse to. He narrowed his gaze on her.
Do you remember what I told you about passion, Felicity? I told you it is not like love. It is not patience or kind or whatever else scripture likes to tell us. It is not want. It is need.
Heat was coming off him in waves, wrapping itself around her with the promise of his words. What would it be like to be needed by him? Would it be as heady as how it felt to need him? Because she was beginning to feel she needed him. Surely that was why it had hurt so much when he'd left her. Not because she loved him. And then he added,
Passion comes with the worst of sin, far more than it comes with the best of virtue.
She heard the guilt in his words, and could not stop herself from lifting her hand, from putting her fingers to his cheek, wishing her gloves gone, wishing she could feel him skin to skin. You know about sin, don't you, devil? He closed his eyes, leaning into her touch, sending a flood of pleasure to the core of her.
I know more about sin than you could possibly dream.
You told me once you could see my sin, she said. His beautiful eyes opened again, dark and knowing.
It is envy. You envy them their place.
their lives, their acceptance in society.
Perhaps that had been the case once. Perhaps there had been a time when she would have done anything to have the life the rest of society had. The happiness, the acceptance. No longer.
You're wrong. That isn't my sin.
It was his turn to lift a hand, to touch her, his magnificently warm fingers against her cheek.
What is it, then?
It is want, she said, the words barely there. He cursed softly in the darkness, so close, so impossibly, beautifully close. She pressed on, knowing she shouldn't, unable to stop. I want you, devil. I want to woo you. I want to be your flame. But I fear...
She paused, hating the way he watched her, as though he saw every word that was coming before she formed it. And perhaps he did. It didn't matter.
I fear I am your moth instead. His fingers moved, sliding to the back of her neck, into her hair, pulling her to him and setting her on fire. There was nothing tentative about the kiss, which only added to the heady fog that came over her with it. One moment, she was sure that he wanted to be rid of her, and the next, he was stealing her breath and thought and sanity, one hand cradling her face, the other arm wrapping around her back to keep her steady and pull her close to the heat of him. His mouth played over hers, sending wave after wave of sensation rocketing through her, rough and perfect, his tongue warm and lush against her own. It might well be the last time he kissed her, and it was magnificent. She could happily live here, in his arms, in this stairwell, forever. Except her throat cleared behind him, from what seemed like a mile away, and panic flared at being discovered. She pushed at his shoulders, and Devil lifted his lips from hers in a slow, lingering disengagement, as though he had no reason whatsoever to disengage.
What? He asked, without looking away from her.
You've broken my door, Dahlia said from below. He grunted his acknowledgement of the words, still not looking away from Felicity, whose cheeks were blazing. His free hand ran down her arm to take her hand in his.
We've rooms for things like that, you know, Dahlia added. Devil's beautiful lips flattened into a straight line.
Bugger off.
He leaned in and kissed Felicity again, quick and thorough, leaving her breathless when he lifted his head and said,
Come with me.
As though she could do anything but that. They climbed the stairs, one flight and the next. He didn't hesitate, didn't slow his pace, not even when Felicity craned to see down the beautiful, mysterious hallways that promised adventure and sin. Instead, he led her higher and higher, Felicity's heart pounding harder and harder, until he stopped in an almost pitch-black narrow stairwell, with nowhere else to go. He released her then, and set his hands to the ceiling, rings gleaming in the darkness mere inches above his head, and pushed open an inlaid door, lifting himself up and out, leaving Felicity gaping at his beautiful body, silhouetted against the starlit sky. When he reached back and offered her a hand, she did not hesitate, and he pulled her out into the night where he reigned. Chapter 22. He took her to the rooftops. He knew he shouldn't. He knew he should pack her into a hack and return her to Mayfair, untouched to the home that had been in her family for generations. He knew he was wrong to bring her to this world that was all his and nothing of hers, that would do nothing but soil her with it. But if Felicity's sin was want, so was Devil's. And Christ, he wanted her. He wanted her more than he'd ever wanted anything. And Devil had spent much of his youth hungry and cold, poor and angry. He might have been able to resist his desire, but then she'd confessed her own. I want you. I want to be your flame. But I fear I am your moth instead. And all Devil wished was to take her somewhere so they might burn together. He closed the door after he pulled her up onto the roof of Grace's club, rising from the task to discover her staring out into the night, the city below and the stars above,
as clear as his view of the future, the one he would spend without her. But tonight, he would share this world with her, even as he knew he would regret it forever. How could he resist? Especially when she reached up and removed the mask she'd been given inside, revealing herself to the warm night. She turned in a slow circle, eyes wide as she took it in. And then she raised her gaze to his, and the breathless smile on her face threatened to send him to his knees. "This is magnificent."
"It is," he said,
his own breath coming harshly. She shook her head. "I never think of the rooftops." He extended his hand to her.
"They are the best way to travel."
She settled her hand in his, giving her trust over to him, before he led her from one building to the next, down a long, curving city street, up and over the roofs from ridge to ridge, around chimneys and over broken tiles.
"Where are we going?"
"Away," he said.
She stilled at the words, releasing his hand. When he looked to her, she was facing away from him toward the city. As he watched, she spread her arms wide and turned her face to the sky, breathing in the night, a small smile playing over her lips. Devil froze, unable to keep his eyes from her, from the joy in her eyes, the wash of excited color on her cheeks, the swell of her breasts and the curve of her hips, her hair gleaming silver in the moonlight. For a heartbeat, she was Cardia, unseen by all the world except him, the beginning and the end, the past and the future, the present, as beautiful as the night sky.
"I love this," she said, the words strong and full of passion. "I love the freedom of it. I love that no one knows we are here, secrets in the darkness."
"You like the darkness," he said, the words coming out graveled,
like wheels on the cobblestones below. She looked to him, a twinkle in her eye.
"I do. I like it because you wrap yourself in it. I like it because you so clearly love it."
He tightened his grip on his walking stick, tapped it twice against the toe of his boot.
"I don't love it, as a matter of fact."
Her brows rose, and she lowered her arms to her sides.
"I find that difficult to believe, as you reign over it."
He climbed to the peak of the roof, making a show of considering the drop to the next one, so that he did not have to look at her when he said,
"I feared the dark as a child."
A beat, and then her skirts rustling over the roof tiles as she approached. Without turning, he knew she wished to reach for him, to touch him, and he did not think he could bear her pity, so he kept moving, down to the roof below and up the iron steps to the next, and all the while speaking, more than he'd ever said to anyone before, thinking to stop her from touching him, to stop her from ever wanting to touch him again.
"Candles were expensive, and so they did not light them at the orphanage," he said,
stilling on the next rooftop, his gaze fixed on a lantern swinging outside a tavern far below.
"And in the rookery, we did everything we could to avoid the monsters that lurked in the darkness."
Still she advanced, his name like a prayer on her lips. He tapped his walking stick on the red roof tiles marking the gable of the roof beneath his boot, wanting to turn and face her, to say, "Don't come closer. Don't care for me."
"It was impossible to keep them safe," he said to the city beyond.
She stopped. "Your brother and sister are lucky to have you. I've seen the way they look at you. Whatever you did, you kept them as safe as possible."
"That's not true," he said harshly.
"You were a child too, Devon," she said at his back, the words so soft he nearly didn't hear his name in them.
Lie. Of course he heard it. His name on her lips was like salvation, one he did not deserve.
"Knowing that does not help the regret."
She reached him then, but did not touch him, miraculously. Instead, she sat at his feet on the roof's peak, staring up at him.
"You are too hard on yourself. How much older could you possibly be?"
He should end the conversation there and take her down through the door inset in the roof below to his offices. He should send her home. Instead, he sat next to her, facing in the opposite direction.
She put her gloved hand to the roof between them. He took it in his own,